This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9 is 7:05 in the morning. It's Monday, the 19th of April, and you're listening to The Morning Run. Now, in about 15 minutes, we'll be discussing what you should consider if you want to invest in technology stocks with Samir Sharma of Standard Chartered Malaysia. But first, let's take a look at how global markets ended the week.
Friday ended great on a green, especially in the US, on the back of very good economic data. The Dow closed up 0.5%, S&P 500 closed up 0.5%, Nasdaq up 0.1%. Back over in Asia, also green, Nikkei up 0.1%, Shanghai up 0.8%, Hang Seng positive 0.6%, Singapore positive 0.5%, KLCI marginally up, flat, up 0.01%.
But basically, it was a very good day across...
Very good day on Friday.
Across markets, right?
Yeah.
But for a little glimpse in how markets are going to go and how markets will do this week, we have on the line with us Stephen Innes, Chief Global Market Strategist at AXI. Good morning, Stephen. Now, the surge on the S&P 500 last week, clearly driven by stimulus checks to consumers and also the strong economic indicators. So besides the release of earnings this week, what else might be driving this, amazing feel-good factor for U.S. equities, and will it last?
It's a very good question. I think the resounding feel-good factor right now is the fact that yields in the U.S. are not ripping higher. There seemed to be quite a drop in interest rate volatility over the last 2 weeks, where the Fed repricing narrative has sort of come off the boil. What I'm referring to is the market was increasingly factoring in a quicker liftoff from Fed policy. That seems to have abated quite a bit, and that's really adding to a lot of the luster. When you get that compounded by an uptick in economic data, it's quite positive. But again, we're reaching these kind of levels where a lot of economic growth is starting to be priced in, and people are starting to wonder, well, what happens after we reach peak U.S. economic season, which is not that far away when you think about it. It's only 3 months away, historically speaking, although my view here is it's going to probably extend a little bit further. But, certainly by the time we get to the September, I think those economic data that we seem to be ignoring right now might actually become a factor, not an upside factor, possibly a downside factor.
So, Stephen, are you then a little bit more cautious about markets? Are you readjusting your asset allocation then?
Yeah, definitely. I think over the longer term horizon, not even longer term, more medium term horizon, I think it looks to be sort of a time to reevaluate, similar to what we do at home when we start our typical spring house cleaning. And I think we find a lot of little bit of crumples and dusts hidden under certain areas. And I think we have to be a little bit careful on our outlooks here. With so much priced in, it's worrisome, on two sectors here. One is if the prices continue to accelerate, we're going to get a pushback from central banks that have to defend against inflation. That's the first thing we have to worry about. Second thing we have to worry about is the economic data not supporting, the growth that's currently priced into the stock exchanges. So it's a bit of a wall of worry. Only some small bricks right now, but I think those bricks are going to get a little bit bigger as we near the end of summer.
But where are the safe haven assets? Because if I look at markets, right, Stephen, everything, almost every asset class has done pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, this is the kind of market, it's like all ships rise in this kind of super liquidity market right now. But that's the other thing, too. And that's what I was referring to. If the data continues to go really well, central banks around the world will have to push back against that. So as all ships rise on liquidity, well, all ships will fall on liquidity if the central banks start to pull liquidity. So it's just not one single narrative we have to look out for. It's almost like a dual narrative. And to me, the sum of all those narratives are pointing negative. In other words, if inflation goes up, central banks hike rates, that's negative for the market. The economic downturns and the central banks continue to have to ease monetary policy, that's also going to be negative for the markets in a sense, because of that'll provide a bad forward-looking optic for overall growth assets.
Yeah, Stephen, just want to shift to Asia. Now, with the resurgence of virus cases in India and Japan, that's led to a general pullback in Asian currencies. Does that favor the US dollar?
Well, it's a bit difficult to say because historically, when the dollar weakens, there's several currencies that actually tend to do well in the basket. So I'm looking at a little bit of a divergence in the basket right now. The two currencies with a greater correlation to weaker U.S. dollar would be the Singapore dollar and also the Korean won. I think the Korean won looks quite almost looks like the market darling right now because exports are going to pick up and arguably Korean equity markets are undersold. However, if we look at other currencies like the Malaysian ringgit, the Indian rupee, these tend to not be so correlated to a broader U.S. dollar narrative, and they tend to be factored more idiosyncratic. For instance, Malaysia is very much dependent on bond flows. Worrying sign here is if we do start to see interest rates go up a little bit in the U.S., that's negative for the ringgit. And also, we've got a pretty patchy recovery in oil markets right now, and that's adding to a little bit of uncertainty. So it's a little bit of a mixed outlook in the Asia FX basket right now.
And Stephen, does it really matter that the US Treasury found like 11 economies warrant being placed on this monitoring list as to their currency practices? It includes Malaysia, China, Japan, South Korea, Germany, Ireland, Italy, India, Singapore, Thailand, and Mexico. Is there any significance to this anymore?
Well, the only significance I see it is it gives reporters something to write about. As far as what the central bankers are cared, they just ignore this because a lot of central banks use policy, foreign exchange policy, as an addition to monetary policy. We look at Singapore, for instance, they continue to set currencies according to a band. We look at Switzerland, for instance, they do the same. Surprisingly, they weren't on the list. But I think what the issue here is, it's a very vague and very drawn out narrative or explanation of why you become a currency manipulator. Taking a case like Taiwan, for instance, putting them on the list, it makes absolutely no sense because they just natural are exporters into an importing country, which is the U.S. And because their exports are exceed a X quota, they're considered a currency manipulator. It makes no sense whatsoever. But that's the way I'm looking at it anyway. And currency traders will just sort of step over that and pretty much ignore what the Treasury watchdogs in the U.S. are saying.
But do we know anything about the repercussions beyond that? Like, is the monitoring list a first step of a follow-up action taken by the U.S. Treasury?
What is the follow-up step, really? I mean, are they going to stop supporting those currencies and create almost a currency run? No. So it's, you know, it's that's what we're looking at right now. If they started to pull back liquidity from those central banks, you'd have a run on the dollar again, and then the global economies would tank, very similar to what we've seen in the past. So I think, you know, it's sort of like a red flag that they put up, but I don't think it really has any significant teeth as far as overall impact. I think, however, what we're seeing in the currency markets is a very, very, or from the central bank narrative, is a very much acknowledging what the Feds are doing right now. So with every central bank following very much what the Feds are going to be doing, you can't help a currency strengthen and weaken based on imports, exports. But there are some banks that will intervene when the currency gets too strong. That's just a natural function of courses of action. These are smaller countries that need a slightly weaker currency. And that's not a problem. It shouldn't be a problem globally. And I think the Treasury is more concerned about the bigger picture right now, especially from China. But with China not on the list anymore, I think things are fine. You know, the smaller countries, I think, can get given a pass as they start to recover from this global pandemic.
And Stephen, one last question on gold very quickly. You know, the gold prices on the year to date still down 6.4%, but marginally up last week. Are you a bull or bear on gold?
I'm actually quite bearish, but I'm sort of pivoting a little bit off that narrative. Now, one, we're seeing extremely large physical buying coming off of via Asia. China is the biggest buyer of gold, and now they've opened up the import lanes. I think that's a signal to retail investors in China that the sort of people over there are telling them, I think you should start buying gold. And I think this could be something to keep an eye on. Look, there's a lot of geopolitical uncertainty going on in the world. We've got rising tensions between obviously US and China. We've got rising tensions between the US and Russia. And also we've got extremely dovish central banks. We've got massive twin deficits in the US. All these point to a weaker dollar, in my view, which now is starting to make gold a little bit rosier. So I'm really reappraising my bearish outlook as I'm talking right now. Not as bearish as what I was last week.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Stephen Innes, Chief Global Market Strategist at Axie. telling us his views on markets. He's a little bit more bearish. He's a little bit more cautious. And one sign of that is that he's re-looking at gold as a safe haven asset. Prior to this, he was a bit more bearish, but he thinks it's a good place to hedge your bets, especially since geopolitical tensions still remain.
Yeah, I was intrigued because I was looking at his Twitter account, Stephen's Twitter account, and he's saying that actually retail investors have shot up 75% year on year, right? But they are from a peak of 250% in August 2020.
People going back to work, less time to trade though.
Exactly. But with the stimulus checks coming through, but with a challenging market and uncertainty, I wonder how the retail...
And valuations have gone up so much. Exactly. Markets are at all-time high. Meanwhile, looking at one thing that's gone up really, really high or will be going up really, really high is Grab's valuation. We all do know, I mean, they're looking at what, $40 billion price tag? But apparently they are considering a secondary listing in Singapore after completing a NASDAQ listing via that $40 billion SPAC, and this is according to sources who spoke to Reuters. So the sources noted that the listing on the Singapore exchange will enable Grab to have an investor base closer to where its regional business is based, and that Grab is in this early stages of considering this secondary listing.
I mean, this would be a coup for Singapore. I think SGX has had a long history of trying to attract companies with secondary listings there, and Malaysia, of course, has many companies. I think approximately 28 over companies that are Malaysian-based have secondary listings in SGX. So there's a lot of effort, I think, by the Singaporeans.
Not just Malaysian companies, but of course, Hong Kong
and all that. Yeah. But they also, I mean, secondary listings in Singapore are quite common and quite frequent. So I think this is where how the Singapore position themselves, especially with Hong Kong now, really being the premier location for IPO tech listings, where does Singapore position itself? Very important.
Yeah, I think it will attract a certain group of investors, especially since Grab is honestly such a household name in this region.
Yep.
So it does make sense for them. But up next, we'll be talking to Samir Sharma, Managing Director at Standard Chartered Malaysia, on opportunities in tech and 5G development. Stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.